Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome. It's Friday, and that means Street Level Floppies, episode number 7. This is our show where we highlight creator-owned books, the smaller publishers, and imprint titles. I am your host, Andrew, and I'm here once again with both my co-hosts instead of one like last week. To my right, I have Chris.
Hey, guys. Happy to be back.
And to my left, I have Fred.
What's up?
Hey, so we're here to talk some comics as usual and to remind you that we are proud members of the Nation of Nerds, and our goal is to entertain, educate, and introduce you to some new exciting comic books. So guys, here's the comic book announcements that we should talk about this week. We have one that's from DC, which is dealing with a very popular character, and then we have a surprise special announcement that kind of deals with our show. Okay. So the first one, Batman, Curse of the White Knight, written by Sean Gordy Murphy. It's a new project that's going to continue the last run he had with Batman the White Knight, and it's going to feature Azrael. We are supposedly supposed to get this in 2019. Since he actually does all the art and writes it, I can see why there's a delay. So did you guys get a chance to read any of that interview with him, and did you get a chance to read the original Batman, The White Knight? And does anyone have any thoughts on this?
I read The White Knight. I thought it was done really well. I mean, it's an Elsewhere book. Did you mention that this was like considered the first like black label book, The White Knight? I think they released that as that. So, I mean, I'm excited for it. I like the story, the concept, everything that they did in the original story. I can't wait to see what he does with Azrael.
Yeah, I mean, it's an Elsewhere book, so it is a different kind of take on Gotham and Batman. Chris, have you had a chance to see any of this?
I've seen some of the stories. I've never read White Knight. However, I'm a big fan of Azrael. Am I saying that right, Azrael?
Mm-hmm, I believe so.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. I know, like, some people don't like him because they say like he was just like a product of the 90s and stuff like that. Uh-huh. But I personally always thought he was cool, kind of with that sword and the uh-huh. whole like Christian crusader uh-huh. kind of thing going on. That was really dope. So I will go back and probably read White Knight. Will I have to read that in order to know what's going on with this new one, or you don't know?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. They say it's going to pick up where the other one ended. So I don't know if it's going to be written that way. You would think they're going to write it in a way just to sell these books, because you have to sell these books. You can't make it so exclusive that you lose readers just because they can't understand. I trust his writing style, so maybe he will. You know, the trade comes out next week. That, you know, this announcement coincides with that. It's like, hey, let's sell a lot of the first one by announcing that we're writing another one. The art is really good, though. And it like I said, it's an Elseworld take, you know. The way he presents Harley Quinn, the way he presents Joker are so different that it makes for an interesting story. You know, his thought was, what if Joker ever got it together? What kind of damage could he really do if he actually wasn't maniacal and he actually was more like a Lex Luthor type who could do damage with some real thought? And so it's a good book. Yeah, definitely. Now, in our second book, it's been announced and everyone knows the book's out, but it's called What If X-Man 1. It is written by Brian Edward Hill, art by Neil Edwards and Giannis Milogonius. Does that sound right? And Rachel Rosenberg. I'm assuming she's doing the colors because I think she's a colorist. And then cover by Raza. Is that how you say that? Raza. And then there's a special little piece written in the comic, his first credit, his first Marvel credit, our very own panels and hoodie, Christopher Holmes. So go ahead. Yeah, we're going to embarrass you a little bit.
Yeah. So I was just shredding some papers. I was over at Marvel shredding some papers. And one of the editors, Chris Robinson, he's a great guy. He works on a lot of the X-Men books, as well as some other stuff like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. And I'm sure that there's a bunch of other stuff that I'm not remembering. Old Man Logan, Stuff like that. And he came up to me and he was like, "Hey, have you ever written a copy before?" And I was like, "No, I don't, you know what that is." And he showed me a few examples, kind of how, like, I guess the most recent example would be the Spider-Gwen books, how, like, the back of every Spider-Gwen book, they had kind of like a biography of some of the characters who don't get featured within the story. That so you would never know what their backstory was without that part. And he was like, "Hey, like, I'm super swamped. Do you think you can tackle this?" And of course I was like, "Yeah." So he gave me a list of who I can choose from. It was either I had to choose two. So it was either Beast in Cable or Jubilee and Rogue. And I thought Jubilee and Rogue would be really fun to kind of write within the realm of this story, which I won't spoil for you guys.
Yeah, but you guys have to buy it.
Yeah. But he told me, just have fun. You know, come up with their backstory, maybe how they discovered their powers within this world. Maybe, you know, come up with their powers, but put like a spin on it so that it fits into, you know, kind of this world. Yeah. So that was really fun. And then later he was like, "Hey, how would you like to be credited?" And I'm like, "Wait, credited? This is nuts. This is kind of crazy." So, It was really a fun project, and overall, that book is actually really, really good. I know if you've been listening to the show, you know Fred talks about Brian Edward Hill. You know he really likes his writing. So this book is the same, Fred. If you know, he won't let you down with this one. It's really good.
I'm buying two copies just because, you know, I got to get an autograph from you, man. On that book, got to send it to Brooklyn.
Yeah, heck yeah, yeah. I mean, congratulations, man. That is so awesome. I mean, even your story. I'm just shredding papers, just minding my own business. Hey, kid, you want to write a book?
How many people are always getting, like, your first, like, credit is linked to Brian Edward Hill? And I mean,
and the X-Men,
right?
Yeah. It is crazy. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm just disappointed you didn't pick Beast, but okay, I'll forgive you.
I didn't. You know what? I felt like I was like racking my brain on like what can I do with him, like within that realm. I'm sure if I had like enough time to kind of think about it, I could have did it. But I actually it was kind of a race against the clock. So when he hit me up, when he asked me to do it. It was maybe like 2 o'clock. And he's like, "Hey, I kind of need this by the time you leave." And I was like, "Oh, man." So after I finished shredding paper, I didn't even pick up any more projects for the day. I just kind of worked on that. So it was kind of a race. And I thought it would be a lot easier to kind of come up with something for them. What was really fun was that, like, they kind of already have, like, pretty memorable backstories. Like, we all know about Rogue and how, like, her thing, and we all know about Jubilee. So I kind of was able to, like, take their backstories and then, like, say, how can I fit it, you know, creatively into, like, this world. It was a really fun project. I'm really happy that Chris let me do that. It was really fun. It brought a smile to my face to kind of, you know, see the name credit there. I was, like, going around the office showing everybody, like, my name's here.
And it was tough just keeping the secret. Like, you told us, what, like, a month and a half ago?
Yeah. Is it that long? It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I'm like, I can't tell anyone. I was afraid to even tell my kids.
Yeah, that is wild. So people, go out and buy it. What if X-Men 1, Brian Edward Hill, and Christopher Holmes?
Yes, I get just as much credit. Nice.
Well, okay, guys. Well, that's our news for today. That was fun. Maybe next week someone will have a question about well, Chris's process after you read what he did, and we're gonna let him answer it for you. Cool. So let's go into our books for this week, the six books that we chose to review. There were some pretty good books. It was definitely one author shined above the others. He had two offerings this week, and we're going to go ahead and start with one of his offerings, Bone Parish number 3, The Winter's New Making a Drug from the Ash of the Dead Could Have Deadly Consequences. But now that the drug may be the only thing that can help them save their family from the cartel, but will they survive this deadly gambit? Written by Colin Bunn, illustrated by Jonas Scarf, colorist Alex Gumeris, lettered by Ed Dukeshire, cover Lee Gerbert, published by Boom, Bone Parish. Okay. Chris, what'd you think of Bone Parish?
Okay, so this is issue number 3. Mm-hmm. And I believe we've reviewed both books so far on this show, and each time I've gave them a 5.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't let me down. I don't think it's as strong as the previous issues, which I'll get into that, but it was good and it did have its moments. My only problem with this book right now is that it's starting to show that it's a limited series. Which is fine, but I'm starting to have problems with the pacing, and I'm starting to have problems with how some of the events are kind of coming out. I don't know how to go through this without spoiling, but you know, you get this group that is kind of trying to come for the family's, I guess, territory. Mm-hmm. Really aggressively. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like we don't get a sense of, they kind of touched on it in issue 2, but you don't really get a sense of how they're in a position to do this. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? They kind of just come out of nowhere and just do it.
Yeah.
You know? So it just feels like there was some sort of a time gap between issue 2 and issue 3, but really it takes place right afterwards. So it shouldn't mm-hmm. feel that way, you know? But like I said, it also had its really good moments. Like the end was really crazy. I was not, you know, expecting that. These books have shown a history of having these endings that were like, whoa, you know, yeah. that just leaves you waiting for the next one. You really see that the family is at its most vulnerable point, whereas like kind of in the first issue, they seemed really strong and really put together. Now, you kind of see them unraveling a bit. Yeah. You see, you know, stuff happening. And there's a really cool action scene in this one. And I think you guys know what I'm talking about, the shootout in the graveyard.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Man, that was cool. That was really cool. So he, like, you know, where he does what he does, and he's having those visions mm-hmm. of like kind of, that was hot. I was like, okay.
That was great. Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. Hey, Fred, what did you think about it?
I enjoyed this book. Not as much as the previous, but I didn't enjoy it. I liked how, who is it? Is her name Bridget? How she discovered some side effect mm-hmm. and the reason why people like were having bad trips in this issue.
Yeah.
I enjoyed, you know, Chris didn't name them, but he was speaking of the cartel and their advancement and the push to, you know, to the Winters family. I liked the action that helped, you know, because the Winters family seems like distracted in this book, and a lot of things go down when they're distracted. So like the action picks up in here, and it just shows how dangerous, you know, what the family is dealing with. But man, I like this book. I especially like the, like Chris mentioned, the end of this book. That was straight gangster right there. Like how they did that. I was like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. I'm like, man, I was like, I can't wait to see what happens if it picks up from there in the next issue. But yeah, and other than like the story and things, I thought the art is still fantastic, man. It's done really well.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, the book is one of my favorites. It was one of my picks of the week, and it didn't disappoint before I read. And that idea, like you're saying, in the graveyard of, in essence, they used the ash as a weapon. Was really mm-hmm. cool. I'm not going to say how they did it exactly, but they used the ash yeah. as a weapon. That was awesome because it showed another side of how creative and useful that drug is. And if, you know, the bad guys discover how to use it in that way, wow, all bets are off. And the family dynamic, it seems to be falling apart. You know, the mom, you have her over here doing some things that are not probably smart. And she probably was suckered into something, you know, to, so that she wasn't around when this hit happened. I think it's going to come back to the, like, the mafia family. The New York family is somehow orchestrating everything. And Spook's a lot of fun. I mean, it has that, you know, it really got into the gangland this time a little more. But yet you still have the sister story, which gets deep and dark and kind of scary with what, you know, we're getting deeper into how she's coming up with these drugs and some of the things she experimented with that strange ex-boyfriend of hers that's no longer with us, you know.
Yeah. Maybe.
So there's a lot. Good book, definitely. If you were going to give it a score, Chris, what would you give it?
I'd give it a 3.5.
Okay.
It is a great book. I wish that the pacing was a little bit better as far as the story. I felt like it jumped a bit, but it's a good book. 3.5.
Rushing, probably. They're trying to rush to get it done.
Yeah, it feels a little bit rushed,
And Fred?
I'll give it a 4.5. I enjoy the tension in this book. I think, you know, if the New York family gets involved, then, wow, that's going to be another level. But what's happening right now, I dig it.
I'd give it a 4, too. I just really enjoy this book. It's probably one of my favorite books of the week, even including if you're going to throw in the Marvels and the DCs. Like I said, I really look forward to this book. It doesn't disappoint. Maybe it's not to the level of the first two, but it still was very entertaining. It was my favorite read of this week for sure. All right. Now, book number two, Stranger Things 1, the nostalgia igniting hit Netflix original series comes to comic book shelves. Follow Will Byers into a dimension of decay and destruction where he must use his wits and resolve to dodge and the pursuit of the Demogorgon and escape the Upside Down. Based on Will's unseen journey during season one of hit Netflix show Stranger Things, written by Jody Hauser, pencils by Stefano Martino, inks by Keith Champagne, cover Alexi Bricklot, colorist Lauren Aff, letters by Nate Pecos of Blambot, and a ton of variant covers. Bear with me. A variant cover by Lee Bermejo, Francisco Matina, Clayton Crane, Rafael Albuquerque, Lucio Perillo, Babs Tarr, and Kyle Lambert. This is Stranger Things, published by Dark Horse, excuse me. So I watched Stranger Things, and I really enjoyed the show. So at the same time, I kind of brought this up last week when we were talking a little bit about Killmonger, how I don't tend to like comic books that are based on movies and shows. They're just, I don't know, they just try too hard to be the movie, or they try too hard to look like the movie, the way they're drawn. Mm-hmm. Just they don't always hit. So I was kind of going in with, you know, my usual bias as I read it. And then the book was a bit confusing. I was really like, I don't understand how this, what is this? You're retelling the same story. I'm lost.
Yeah.
I read the whole thing. I kind of skipped to the end and I went back and read it. And then it clicked. And the key is what the solicitor just said, and I should have read this, based on Will's unseen journey during season one. So this is about, it's not a spoiler because you should see the show before you read this book, or you're not going to get this book anyway. It's about what Will's perspective, well, he was in the Upside Down. Well, the whole show's going on, Will's in the Upside Down, and this is what he was experiencing in the Upside Down.
Okay.
It's interesting if you're a fan of the show. It adds a little something to the fans of the show. You know, it's like, oh, this is a new perspective. It could have some really cool things as it goes along. I cannot recommend this book to not fans that are people that don't know the show. They would be lost and they would be disappointed. And there's not a lot of dialogue and there's a lot of weird scenes that are flashbacks or to things that happened, like the kids playing Dungeons and Dragons, that if you haven't seen the first episode, isn't going to make sense to you. So this is definitely a niche book. I think if you like Stranger Things, if you're a fan of it, you're probably going to enjoy this book. Jody Hauser is a great writer. I read a lot of her Star Wars stuff. She's also on Faith with Valiant. And she does a good job of kind of catching the voice of what we would expect to be in the TV show. But It's a hard recommend. Fred, what did you think of Stranger Things?
Well, I too have watched the show. I enjoy the show, but I didn't enjoy this book. I mean, I think you and I spoke about it when I originally started reading it, and I read it the first time. I got like 3 pages in. I'm like, well, here we go again. It's just a TV show all over again. And then, you know, you told me, go back through it. There's going to be something different in it. So I went back through it, slowly read it, and I understood that, you know, after reading it, it was from Will's point of view, from the upside down world. But still, to me, it kind of takes away from the show for me. But that's mm-hmm. just my opinion. I thought the art was, I think we spoke about this too. It's coloring book style. It looks a lot like it. Like they try to portray the characters like a coloring book, try to make it exactly. I don't know. It's this book's definitely not for me, but you know, we had to put it out there because it's Stranger Things. There's a whole fan base for it. So, how do you feel, Chris?
I didn't like this book. I'm sorry. I don't like. I appreciate how much work goes into making a comic book, even when it's something that, you know, I assume the producers of Stranger Things, you know, probably went to Boom and asked that they work on their franchise. I too went in and watched all the episodes of Stranger Things. Me and my wife, we watched it together. We enjoyed the show. But to me, this didn't necessarily add anything. And a lot of times when I read Boom adaptations of stuff, I really like it. They have a few things that, you know, Adventure Time and a couple of other shows that they do that I feel like it adds something, that I'm getting a story here that can't be told on TV, or, you know, there's not enough time for it to be told on TV. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. They did pick an interesting, you know, spot, like you said, using a Will, being in an upside down, because like, as I'm sure people know, in the first season, you get scenes of him in the upside down, but you don't really quite know. You know, you just kind of see him slowly deteriorating at moments, but you never, you know, see him fully, you know, what's going on there. There's never like an episode of just him in the upside down. So, you know, on that, I felt like they did pick an interesting point in which that a cool story could get told later, but it was just, this one didn't do it for me. It's like a weird narrator. Who's the narrator?
I think it's Will.
Is it Will?
I think it's him. Mm-hmm. I believe it's him because he talks about the Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. So I think, yeah, I'm 99% sure he's the narrator.
Okay. Then maybe I just got to go back and try to catch
it. Yeah, it wasn't an easy read. I don't blame you. Like I said, I had to go back. I almost gave up, and then I went back, and then I understood it. And But I'm not by any means saying that this is like, wow, go out and get this. But listen, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, because I know we tagged the creators on our show, and I know, like, no creator is just going to get on and just, like, put whatever story and this and that. I just personally didn't think this is the one. I do think it sets up, you know, maybe for later issues, you know, to come in and try to do something, but this one didn't do it at all, no.
I was just going to say that I ran the idea by friends of mine that aren't necessarily comic book readers who are Stranger Things fans. And they were intrigued. They were intrigued. Okay. And some of them might look into it. And that's kind of the point that I'm putting out there, is that maybe that's the audience that they're going for, is to try to get some Stranger Things fans to go in, to come and segue into a comic. They put together a good team. I mean, you even heard all those variants. I mean, they went out and got some rock stars to do some drawing on this, but the art, like Fred said, it's always like that. I remember the old original Star Wars books. I was telling him when Star Wars first started making comics, and it was that style. They're trying so hard to make it look like Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher. They just, like you said, look like a coloring book. Like they,
you mean like before the Disney acquisition, right?
Yes,
like,
before.
Yeah.
We're talking before they were even, or maybe they were Marvel books, the original ones. So I'm not talking about the, I think they were with Dark Horse for a while. Those are actually pretty good. But those old original, like the adaptation of the very first Star Wars movie and some of the size of, just the way they're drawn, just takes you out of it. And I think the new Star Wars books are example at Marvel. They just let the artist draw and they're not so concerned about making this needs to look like this actor. And, and I think they're better. I mean, the writing's very good too, but they're still, it helps. So that would be another knock on it. I hate to knock on it, but
I'm sorry. You're saying?
No, I'm just saying. Yeah.
It's always difficult. I think for a writer to kind of come in because the writer for this comic book, I don't think she's ever written for a show, right?
Maybe she has. I'm not 100% sure about that, but she's written a lot of Star Wars. Like she just did a run on Admiral Thrawn. So she's used to working with properties that probably have a lot of oversight. You know, it's a nice way of saying there's a lot of people sticking their fingers in her stuff, probably saying, you can do this, you can't do that, you can do this.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was going to say that, you know, there's obviously a lot of oversight with Star Wars franchise and other huge franchises like that because you want to make sure it's being true to continuity and stuff like that.
And there's so many things going on, especially Star Wars. You can't conflict the book. You can't conflict the video game.
You can't even conflict the colors of Darth Vader's buttons.
Wow.
Okay, like I'm pretty sure everything has to be like one-to-one perfect on those type of things. But like I think that like we'll see.
Yeah. So Fred, I'm gonna have you be the first one to take the shot. Yeah. What are you gonna give it?
I'll give it a 2.5.
2.5, okay. Chris?
1.5.
I'll go about a 2.5 too. I'm being kind today, but yeah, it may get better, but it's hard. It's hard to adapt something like that. It's hard to capture the magic. All right, book number 3, Frendo number 1. Leo wasn't allowed toys as a kid, but now that he's all grown up, he's going to take yours. He used to play by the rules, but then governments and corporations set fire to the rules and still expected him to behave. He probably would have if he hadn't been for his new friend, Jerry. See, Jerry isn't human. He's a personalized marketing VR and he's malfunctioning. Written by Alex Paganadel. Art and cover by Martin Simmons. Colorist D. Cuniff. Letters by Taylor Esposito. Variant cover Kim McLean. Published by Vault. Frendo, Fred.
Okay. This book, we all know the tools like Google Assistant, Siri, Twitter, Facebook, even Alexa, and how they're used with marketing. Well, welcome to Frendo. Frendo is a book dealing with a society obsessed with technology and capitalism. While politicians ruin the society with the Bernays Act, start like a fake marketing phenomenon. It kind of sounds like Facebook to me. I don't know. But we have our main character, Leo, and we see him in the beginning. He's super young, and his father seems to be ministering against the fleshly desires of the world. Which, you know, when we fast forward ahead, and him being brought up this way is intriguing to me. Because when he gets older, you see him when they fast forward, he wants everything. He's seeking attention. He's seeking money. He's seeking fame, whether if it's, he's like just getting in a car accident and hoping he's on TV. This book to me is very intriguing. It has a real sense of look at me, kind of like society today. What do you guys think?
You mentioned Bernays, which, you know, is really interesting. So as you guys know, I'm a media communications / public relations major. And Edward Bernays is kind of who they call the father of public relations. I recognized that when I was reading, and he was the little history lesson. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. the famous psychologist.
Yeah.
And he took the ideas of Freud about kind of like the human's inner desires and, you know, stuff like that, and used it to help corporations sell things. So yeah, he was kind of one of the first people to sell people on what they want instead of what they need. And it's really interesting. So based off that, I was already interested, especially for a lot of the points that Fred brought up, that you kind of get this character who seems to want to do anything, you know, just to get noticed. And you see a lot of other, you know, people in the book that are kind of the same way. And I think it's really like a social commentary on like how far will people go, or, you know, with the internet, and you get things like YouTube and certain videos where you can kind of record yourself, and there are monetary incentives for you to do so, to kind of do the craziest thing that you can do to make some money or to, you know, get noticed. I agree with Fred that I found it intriguing as well for those same reasons.
Very cool. Yeah, I agree. Very Kardashian, how they are, how they sell themselves on their social media and have built an empire that way, in essence. It's a look at me, and they just, it's just them behaving badly, basically, most of the time. I didn't enjoy the book as much as you guys, and I've thought about it. It just may have been too real for me, and I just didn't feel like going down that rabbit hole. It was kind of depressing. The early part with the father felt a bit abusive. I felt like he kind of has a little bit of a Westboro Baptist, kind of like he homeschooled, kind of didn't allow the kid to have anything. So now that he's on his own, he swung the other way, and he has no impulse control, and he has no social skills. So he's trying to become famous with apps and not real people and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it just wasn't one of my favorite books. I'm sorry, Fred.
There was a moment in here was where I was like, what the hell's going on? Like, there's this club. You know, Leo's an actor, so he dresses up as Wizard of Oz, and it was like this kinky Wizard of Oz go-go dancing thing. It kind of reminded me of, like, you know, if you guys heard of, like, furries. That's the type I was like, what is going on in this world?
Yeah, it was whack. And then they come out, and then what was that supposed to be? Like lava or ash?
It got wacky. Yeah.
And then the homeless man goes off the rails. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I maybe need to go back and look at, because I've read so much about this book since I've read it. Like, what am I missing? What am I missing? And I think I do understand why people are liking it. And maybe those are the reasons I'm not liking it. It just felt too, I don't know, depressing in a time when there's too much real depression out there and what's going on in the real world. So
it's kind of crazy, because if you think about it, like, this book you might be turned off on. And, you know, like in the, what was it, around like 2003 or whatever, 2001, when the movie Idiocracy came out.
Oh, yeah.
This almost kind of has that type of feel, like, you know, like just how the world is heading in certain things. And it could be scary, in a sense of realism. You might want to read something else.
Yeah. I was ready to read Batman after that. No offense. But yeah. So if you're going to score it, Chris, what would you give Friendo?
I'd give it 3.5. It had a lot of good themes, but I agree with you, Andrew, that it could have maybe told the story a little better. It was a little wacky, a little crazy towards the end, and kind of went to left field at times. So, yeah, 3.5.
Okay. And Fred?
I have it at a 4 for this issue. I'm interested to see what happens in the next issue, if it continues to be this crazy.
I'm going to give it a 3, because I do understand what it's trying to do. It's just not my particular style of comic that I want to read. All right. Now let's move on to the next one. Man Eaters number 1. Eisner nominated and New York Times bestselling thriller writer Chelsea Kane returns to comics with an ongoing series. A mutation in toxoplasmosis causes menstruating women to turn into ferocious killer wildcats, easily provoked and extremely dangerous. As panic spreads and paranoia takes root, the fate of the world rides on the shoulders of one 12-year-old girl. Part cat people, part the handmaiden's tale, man-eaters will have everyone talking, from the creative team behind the Eisner-nominated series Mockingbird, written by Chelsea Kane, artist Stella Greenvoss, penciler and inker Kate Nieminski, colorist Rachel Rosenberg, letters by Joe Carmagna, cover by Lita Mitterquick, variant cover by Lita Mitterquick, Maria Sanapo, and Beth Park. So there's three variants. Published by Image. Man Eaters, Chris, what did you think of this crazy book?
So I went into this one a little bit blind. I didn't have no idea what it was about. Fred was writing, you know, throughout the week, asking me like what I thought about it, but I kind of got to this one a little bit later. So I didn't know what I was getting into, but I remember you guys like saying in the chat how like this is gonna be the one people are talking about. So I was like, okay, I gotta get on this. And man, was that crazy, right? So I hadn't read any like solicitations for anything. I just started reading, you know, blind. Uh-huh. And so I had to kind of figure out what was going on as I'm just reading the book. And as I'm starting to figure out what's going on, I'm like, man, this is some imagery. This is some, yeah, this is crazy, right? it's important though. I feel like this kind of gives me, even though it's a different topic, it is very kind of socially relevant, just like when we were going over Border Town, mm-hmm. which that was more about kind of immigrants and their place in America. This one is kind of more about women and just mm-hmm. their place in society, and maybe, you know, how men view women and things like that, or what happens when women get the power, you know. Yeah. It is a very interesting book. There were a lot of moments that were just like, whoa, did that just really happen? Yeah. Or like, especially in the dialogue when you kind of get the explanation for how they try to stop the women from uh-huh. kind of turning into cats, like putting stuff in the water. And, like, and I was like,
yeah.
And even something funny about that is, I don't know if you guys stayed with it after the book was over, but they kind of had these advertisements in the back of the book.
No, I didn't see that.
You guys didn't see it? Did you see it, Fred?
I skimmed through it, but I didn't read them all.
Yeah, there was one cool one where it was just like estrogen-free water for the boys.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. You can buy, it was like an advertisement for estrogen free water. And I think it says something like, let the boys be the boys or something. Oh, it was, it's just, this is not, this one was crazy. This story was good, but I did like it.
Yeah.
Nice. Fred.
I mean, from, right from the jump in this book, like, the opening panels where like we just see like the tampons being like superheroes and stuff, and I'm like, what is going on in the story? And then like I keep reading, then you find out that the main character is playing with them like they're her superheroes, and it was funny. This book was a lot of fun. It was a lot of satire towards things that certain people may believe about women, and she has fun with it. I mean, you definitely know the reason behind this book. The, you know, it definitely has something to do with probably the Women's March, and mm-hmm. she's just putting it out there. She's having fun. There's a lot of, like, the dialogue I really enjoyed a lot. Like, you know, like, there's many panels where you just keep seeing someone saying, I think I found something. I think I found something. And I'm like,
yeah.
Or, like, there's, like, people singing a wee ma wop, a wee ma wop, you know? And I'm like, oh. And the art, like the t-shirts, or the way that she describes her father in this, and like his shirt, and stuff, or comparing him because he's a policeman or a, or what is he, a detective? And yeah, she shows like a picture of Magnum PI or a picture of Miami Vice. Name right now, but I was like, man, this is really witty. This book is really witty. I had a lot of fun with it. I didn't expect it to be like this because, just like Chris, I didn't know what I was getting into. I just thought Maneaters, and you saw the glittery cover. You know, I had a lot of fun with this book. I enjoyed it a lot.
I kind of knew what we were getting into with this book. I had read a solicit, and I've seen the cover for the next one. Wait till you see that. And I knew she was going to tell something very interesting. And what I like about this book is so well written. And like you said, the satire, the humor. She's trying to give us a serious message, but she's written it so well, and it's so entertaining. It's so much fun. You can't help but laugh at the absurdity of some of the situations. You have a mother holding the gun on her teenage daughter while yelling to the husband to get the restraints, you know, and so they can like take their daughter in for whatever has to be done to make sure she doesn't have the disease that turns them into, and then how supposedly they may have got the disease, what caused that virus from cleaning litter boxes. Oh my God. There's just so many absurd, crazy ideas. And like you said, it's really good satire to show that, yeah, there's some people that have some, maybe not that exact idea, but some crazy ideas on how things work for women. And I'm giving this one to my daughters. Each one of them is getting a copy of this. I'm like, you need to read this book. You're going to just laugh your ass off. There's no way around it. So such a good book and so well written. And you could tell she just took the gloves off and she's just going to have fun with this thing. Oh man. I can't wait to see where it goes next. So, Chris, if you were going to score it, what would you give it?
I'd give it a 4. This is my favorite read. This and Bone Parish were, you know, my favorites. But yeah, 4.
All right. And Fred, what would you do?
I'm going to give this one a 4.5. I enjoyed this one just as much as Bone Parish. So we're going to equal the score of that book.
Nice, nice. I would give it a 4. Like I said, a lot of fun. I feel it's really well written. The art was done very well. And I like the idea that she's telling us an important story in an entertaining way that me as a father can enjoy, even though I may not be the target audience of the book. All right. Next book, Shanghai Red number 4. Red goes underground as the press gangs she's been killing off are striking back, sending her through a city beneath the city of Portland, one full of gangs, drugs, crime, and secrets. As Red fights to stay alive in the dark and tightens her net around her final target, the waves she's been making come crashing back on Liverpool Liz, her sister, and anyone close to her. Written by Christopher Sabella, art and cover by Joshua Hinkson, color flatting, Roman Stevens, letters by Hassan Oteman Elahu, variant cover, Chris Visions, published by Image, Shanghai Red. So Shanghai Red has been an incredible series that I've really enjoyed, but this book was a little tougher of all the books I've read in the series. I got confused when they were underground. Once they got back up out of the tunnels, she got back out of the tunnels, it was easier to follow the book. I enjoyed the confrontation with the main baddie. And now we're leading to the big crescendo of this series as they ride off on bikes for the big showdown. Mm-hmm. It's just a bit of a minor complaint that it was hard to from the art style to really discern who she was fighting, which one was her, which one was the other person. It got really confusing. Now that may have been the intent, but it made for a difficult read. But I was so happy that it kind of, once they got out, it kind of got back on for me on track, just me personally. And I enjoyed the end. A minor nitpick, because I'm an old man. The lettering style in this is difficult to read. It's like an old English style of lettering. And I get it. It's kind of like to show the time period, but that's a real difficult. There's a lot of dialogue and a lot of monologue, and it's hard to read at times. And I find myself straining my eyes. That's an old man nitpick, but I'm just throwing that out there. So, Fred, what do you got?
Okay. I think this issue is supposed to be a tough read, because to me, it felt like that this book was looking to Red's head and what she's thinking at times, and, you know, to show that, you know, she's confused. She doesn't know what's going on. She's fighting with herself. There's many times where she's speaking to herself, calling herself, what was it, from Red to Jack, like having a conversation with her different personalities. So that was okay, but it took me a while to like catch on to that on my second read. I did like the flashbacks or the mirroring of what was happening at the same time. I thought that was showing the rage and stuff. And this book continues to have a lot of action and rage. And you can see how those traumatic experiences affected her and caused these maybe multiple personalities that we continue to see. I like this book still a lot. It's just this one, this issue causes you to think a bit more. What do you think, Chris?
I think I like this was my personal favorite issue of the series. I really like the action. I personally like the underground scenes. I thought it was really good action. I liked how it kind of flashback. Like it was, she was kind of having flashbacks, like of that one guy. He had said something. And I think that was the same guy who had said that same thing to her a while ago. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I took from it, that she was just getting flashbacks from that before jumping into action. Again, I remember the last time we talked about this book, we kind of talked about it in the same vein as like a Kill Bill kind of revenge. And this is brutal. This is a very brutal, violent book. That you, a lot of the scenes I really liked because of that, because of just like it didn't care how much blood it showed, or it didn't care how much, you know. And remembered, you know, even though she's dressed like a boy, this is a woman fighting men, you know, and these really brutal, you know, and she's frustrated about kind of what happened to her in her past, and she really wants to get revenge in the most violent way she can. She really wants to take these people out. So I personally really like this issue. I thought it was very strong for that reason.
That makes sense. I didn't hate the issue. I liked it. I'm definitely going to give it a score. But that first part confused me, and it took a couple of reads. But again, that may have been intentional, as Fred said, that we were meant to be confused. We were meant to really
That's
feel
what I think.
That she was lost down there and stuff, and the whole world, and how no one down there even really helps her. They just kind of tell her, don't come down here anymore. Get out of here. You know, that was kind of crazy. But there's a lot. It's wrapping up. And like you talked about, Bone Parish, it did feel like this one tried to do a lot. She was all over the place. She is underground. Yep. She went and she dealt with a politician type guy. She goes back to her ship. And I'm like, where's her crew? And we kind of got to remember that what's going on over there with the ship. And then they come and get her, and she's riding off on the bikes for the big showdown for the saloon and the woman that owns the saloon, Liverpool Liz. So it's like it's racing to the finish line, which is kind of exciting, but it feels a little rushed.
I wonder, because I actually don't know the answer to this question, if when a writer kind of pitches a story to a company, does he say, okay, do they say like, we want 6 issues and then you got to make the story fit into 6 issues, or do you write the story and it takes up as many issues as it takes? I really wonder.
I bet you, unless you're a big time and you get to make your own demands, they probably give you an issue number.
A limit, yeah.
And I think what may happen, which makes sense to me, is you have to really put some real, like, true story building into 1 and 2 to get people to stick.
Yeah.
And then maybe you have to rush through 3 and 4 and then have a killer finale in 5.
Yeah.
I think that might be the way to do it. And every now and then we get that masterpiece where they just hit the beat on all 5.
Yeah.
So just a thought. Fred, what do you think on that?
Because I think this is only a 5-issue run. So next issue would be it. I believe there's a lot of things that would have to be tied up, but I wonder how her sister's going to play into this, because we're left wondering there, and you know, her association with, what did you say her name was? Liverpool
Liz.
Yeah, I wonder what's going to happen there, because she kind of, you know, Molly, Red, Jack, whatever you want to call her, she tries to make, like, family important. So I'm wondering if the family aspect may backfire for her. I don't know. We'll have to see how it finishes up.
Yeah. One last thought that I would give is Image does these, like, where they do five and then they take a bunch of months off and then the artist comes back and does five more. Kind of like Coyotes is doing would be an example of the one that's going on right now. But they do that a lot with some of their comics where they do a little arc and then they take time off. So it could be that it's not ending, that maybe just this arc is ending and there's going to be a layoff.
He's
coming back to it.
Right. I hope that's the, because I like anything Sabella does, and you can see like Chris is enjoying it, because whether it's Crowded or this, or House of Muck, it seems like, you know, he's rubbing off on Chris too. So
that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like the book too. Definitely. Without a doubt. So if you were going to score this, Chris, what would you give Shanghai Red?
I give it 3.5. Even though I really did like it, I do agree actually with a lot of the points that you made, Andrew, about it jumping a lot from place to place. And she's in a lot of different settings, having a lot of different fights.
Yeah,
you know, so it's that part rushed. I didn't quite. Yeah. So, but it is good nonetheless. So 3.5.
Right. And Fred, what would you go with?
I would give the same exact score, 3.5.
Same, 3.5s. I really love the series, and it's hard for me to knock down. Like you said, Sabella's doing such great work. The brutality, the art is beautiful. And it's done very well. So, all right. Last book of the night, Cold Spots number 2. Dan has tracked his estranged wife and daughter to the dreary island off the coast of North Carolina. And the closer he gets, the colder his surroundings become. A cold so deep it can freeze the flesh from your bones lingers in the air, and Dan is starting to believe his daughter might be the key to this dawning, bone-chilling, supernatural winter. Written by Cullen Bunn, art and cover by Mark Torres, letters by Simon Boland, published by Image, Cold Spots. Fred, what did you think of Cold Spots?
Okay, if you're a fan of Cullen Bunn's Harrow County, chances are you're going to enjoy Cold Spots. Right off the jump in issue 2, the police are finding people iced out, not like diamonds or on their wrist or necklace, but these people are literally ice cubes. But the police act like it's normal. It happens all the time. There's like, they're not freaking out. None of that stuff. In this issue, we meet some new characters. We meet Zeb. He's a creepy looking Duck Dynasty dude that, he just looks like there's something going on there. I don't know what it is, but I guess we'll find out. There was a discussion that him and the main character Dan had that, you know, Dan was, I think he was driving around in his Jeep and the radio was going on and it was talking about like, it's going to be enjoy the summer. It's t-shirt weather, you know, t-shirt shorts time, grab your sandals, head to the beach, something to that effect. And he was listening to that and he's wondering, you know, this city that he was listening from is like an hour away. How come it's so warm there, but it's so cold there? And it pans to the panel where his whole Jeep is surrounded by Premonition's ghost, which was pretty freaky. I mean, yeah. I think the art adds so much to the story. It's done so well. It adds to the eeriness. The first time I read this, because I read Friendo and a couple other books, I didn't catch everything in this book, but I'm glad I reread it because I had more of appreciation for this. What do you guys think?
I personally liked it. It still has some of the problems that I thought it had in issue 1, which is just like, it's a lot of dialogue, but you're not really learning much. You do learn, you know, kind of that he's the father, but I think one of you guys kind of figured that out back in the first issue. When I don't remember, I think it was Fred. He kind of pointed that out. I think he's the dad and stuff like that, you know, straight from the first issue. So that wasn't really anything. I think I'm going to go back and reread the second issue to kind of rewrap my head around what's going on with some of the characters, because I felt like I don't quite get it. But however, there were some moments like the one you pointed out with the ghost around in the car when he's kind of sleeping in the car, the conversation with the old man. And then also like you mentioned, when he's talking to the detective and the detective is kind of like, it's like an everyday thing. And then like you see someone go up to the detective and it's like, hey, we got like a similar problem, you know, close by, you know, so that's terrifying. You don't know really what's going on in this town. And I'm interested in finding out more.
Yeah, if I were going to describe this one, I would say slow, very slow. And I told you that I feel like this would be wonderful in a trade. Like I might want to, if we weren't doing a show, trade weight for this. And you kind of thought, oh, you don't like it? No, that's not what I mean. I think some books do better in a large format where you read six in a row, where it's in a trade. And I think it wouldn't feel as slow because it would just keep building and building. Because I think that's what he's doing. He's building it. He's giving us a little bit. He's building it. But in a single issue format, like I said, it feels like there's not a lot going on. There's just these little tiny reveals. There's some art that shows some shocking moments. Like he hasn't had an interaction with these premonitions, with these ghosts.
Yeah.
He just, they're surrounding him. There's off panel bodies being found. And then we get the last panel is the first time we really see some interaction between character and creature, in essence, whatever they are. So I think that this is going to be a good, almost like a TV show. You know, you would have to watch like, I don't know, a whole regular TV season is what, like 20 episodes or something like that. I feel that's what this is like, that this is just an episode and it's just crawling along and it's building. So I don't dislike it, but I would say it's slow. It's definitely a slower comic.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with the slow part and things, it does feel like something that you could see like made for TV, kind of like a Stephen King book, like it's slow in the beginning, but you know there's going to be a huge payoff. I think this issue with her name's Grace, I think she has a lot to do with this, the whole city being like this. I mean, maybe that's just my feeling, because it's very eerie how, you know, they want her. It's kind of like a poltergeist kind of thing. Like she's the little girl. Like they're here. I don't know if she's the ringleader of them, but the last panel where she's standing at the window. Now I mentioned this to you, Andrew. I'm not sure if she's causing the cold because she's touching the window and then you see like ice forming around. That's intriguing to me. I don't know. I don't know. Did you guys get that feeling from it?
I didn't feel she's causing it, but I feel she's somehow connected to it. Like they were there, and that's why the mom's talking about that she needs to be here. This is her place. So that is the place to be, surrounded by these things, whatever. And so she's for some reason connected to them, but I'm not sure she brought them there. I have a feeling this kind of stuff was already there. That's just my take. But yeah, that whole thing, all the like, what was up with all the little dolls and all that stuff? that was some creepy art. Definitely high marks for the art, creeping me out. That was
The art, especially when he got to the island or whatever it may be, and they were just showing like all the pictures and things around. That was creepy, right? The whole thing. Yeah. And then there was like an art piece that somebody, like an old person was sitting there and you see a spirit coming out of them. That was pretty creepy too. I'm like, whoa. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll have to see.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I just think that the art kind of did its job this book and actually like brought more to the table, you know, than the previous, I felt.
And you have your traditional weirdos, like the weird caretaker man and the old lady of the manor. And all your traditional horror movie.
And the Duck Dynasty guy.
The creepy Duck Dynasty guy. Yeah, definitely. So, Chris, if you're going to give a score to Cold Spots?
I give it a 3.
Okay.
I give it a 3. I think Cullen Bunn is a great writer. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot to be explored in this world. I really want to know more. I'm interested in Fred's theory on if she's the one causing this or if it's more closer to your theory and it's just connected. I really don't know. I feel like I want to go back and read and kind of figure mm-hmm. out what role I think they play in it. But that's going to be interesting to see play out. I really want to know, like, how they're turning people into, like, ice and stuff like that. So, yeah three, because I'm still interested. I'm not turned off.
All right. Fred, what about you?
Well, I kind of scored it a point up because it's Colin Bond, and I'm like that. So I'll give it a 4.
4?
Yeah.
All right. I'll go with about a 3.5. I think there's promise. Like I said, I think it's just very slow. And it's almost, like I said, in a trade, it may have blown my mind if I were like, some books that we've gone back, that I've gone back and read that way have blown my mind, where the people told me it was slow reading it issue to issue. So, yeah. What do you know if this is short, long, anything, Fred? Do you have any?
I thought it said it was like 5 issues.
Everything's 5 issues. Come on, Image.
Anyway, that's so we can get some more Colin Bunn titles after.
Yeah, he has more. He has too much work to do.
Right.
So speaking of Colin Bunn, Fred, go ahead and start us off on Colin Bunn, our artist spotlight of the week.
Colin Bunn was born in 1971. American comics writer, novelist, short story writer. He grew up in rural North Carolina, but currently resides outskirts of St. Louis, or in St. Louis, I believe, Missouri. Now Colin Bunn has a ton of books.
Oh man.
So like I know the book The Damned by Oni Press is super good. I have that Six Gun if you like cowboy stories. Blood Feud is pretty good. I think I'm gonna leave the Marvel ones for you guys, but let me see what else we got here. Let me pick out some Harrow County.
Shock.
Aftershock is what, Unholy Grail. I'm looking over at my books right now. Unholy Grail, Brothers Dracul, Dark Ark, to name a few. I know he did Godzilla, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle book before, Superman, Batman. Oh yeah, Sinestro. That's another one that he did. Aquaman. Aquaman was probably his least favorite work of his that, I've ever read, but of course, like X-Men Blue. I'll let you guys go into what you guys know. I got a bunch written down, but
we know you're a big fan of him. That's why. Chris, what stuff have you read of his? Like probably a lot of the Marvel, I would assume.
Yeah, he did. You know, I know the Venom right now is getting a lot of praise, but he did a Venom before, not too long ago. That was really, really good. I actually have, they have his entire run in a collected edition. I also, read all of X-Men Blue, which was really fun, especially for me because I never before this point was able to read too many X-Men stories with the original 5 X-Men in it.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't, you know, everything that I know of or read was Claremont and forward. So like, I never got to see like those 5 kind of together. So that was really cool to read X-Men Blue, back when they were doing like the resurrection and the X-Men were coming back and everything like that. And he was kind of running it. And for a long time, I felt Blue was the more popular X-Men book, you know, before like Astonishing came out and you know, some other stuff came out, like, I think Generation X. But Blue was definitely better than Gold for a long time. Still is. But yeah, so that's kind of what I know mostly by him was the Venom and the X-Men Blue.
Definitely. I like his new Asgardians in the galaxy. It's only one issue in.
Yeah. Yeah,
I enjoyed it. I think he's going to do some fun things with that. He has some interesting characters. He recently did a Suicide Squad story. It was a one-shot. It was an annual, I believe. He should write more Suicide Squad. He's built for those kind of wacky, crazy, kind of dark characters. He just does so much. And I think this is a great example of we like to talk about is if you're not really into indies and you don't know how to segue into some indie books, this is a guy that you're probably reading. You may not realize it. Like we've named Aquaman, we've named Superman, the X-Men, you know, Venom. These are not small titles. These are big time titles.
Yeah.
And at the same time, because he's a hardworking man, this guy is always writing books. there are so many great things. Like, we reviewed Bone Parish. It's probably one of our favorite books on this show, without a doubt. It seems like all of us tend to really score that high whenever it comes out. Cold Spots is evolving into something. What else is he doing, Fred?
No, but he has done like Deadpool. He's done Captain America, Spider-Man. Deadpool kills
Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe. That's him.
Yes,
where Deadpool goes out and kills them all. Man, that book is brutal.
He did.
How long ago was that?
Okay, there was a Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe 2 that came out a year or two ago, but the original is a bit older. I don't know how many years, but it's brutal. Like, he kills Sue Storm, and like, he straight up just like cold-blooded kills her. Deadpool does.
I love Deadpool. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's like vintage, like, not happy-go-lucky Deadpool. It's like vicious Deadpool.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he did let's see, what else I have? Carnage. He did a lot of Carnage comics. Fearless Defenders, Cable and X-Force, Magneto, House of M. He did that Drax comic with CM Punk at the time where they were writing that together.
I have one of those.
Uncanny X-Men, Civil War X-Men.
Wow.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I forgot he did Magneto.
Yes.
That is, okay, yeah. So, damn, I can't believe I forgot that. Magneto is a wonderful book. If you haven't read Cullen Bunn's run on Magneto, it is... That was before X-Men Blue. That was right before X-Men Blue came out. He did Magneto. And Magneto is an absolutely wonderful book. Like, it's graphic from, like, the first issue, from the first page. He, like, I'm going to tell it. I don't care. It's been out for years. Magneto goes to visit, Magneto's like on this crusade, to bring upon justice anyone who's ever mistreated mutants.
Okay.
And he visits this dude in the diner, right? So the way that they set it up is like, they have a guy like interviewing a guy, and he's telling them kind of what he saw. And pretty much he tells them Magneto sits down with the dude and he rips out all of his fillings. He rips out all of his fillings, and then he tosses him in the street and tells him, I'll replace them for you. And he takes a bunch of street signs and he stuffs them all in his mouth, and they like go out the back of his throat and plant into the ground, just sticking out of his head. It's sick stuff, but it was a really good book. I can't believe I forgot about Magneto.
Yeah.
Definitely read that.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, for like the Star Wars fans, he did the Darth Maul book too. So that one was got a lot of high praise. I think I know he did like Moon Knight. Let's see, who else? Regression. He did a lot of convergence books for DC too, like the Action Comics, the Green Arrows, the Green Lanterns, Suicide Squad. He did Earth 2, World's End. He did Secret Origins for them. Trinity, he had a run, I think, of 2 issues at a time. He also did, for Dynamite, he did Army of Darkness, Red Sonja, The Shadow, Voltron, Battlestar Galactica. Oh, and currently there's a book in Image, I think it came out this week too, is Regression, which, it's another horror book that he does. It's pretty good. He did Conan Slayer, I mean, he does pretty much anything horror. I hope to see him do Swamp Thing someday.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, it's obvious that, I mean, we keep naming and we don't even remember half the time how much he writes. He's constantly writing. He's constantly pitching. I know he has more, you know, because a lot of his X-Men stuff ended. So he's done. He said that. I'm done with the X-Universe for a while. But I know he's not done with. Yeah, he said that he's going to take a break, that they're going to have him do some stuff. So, but that means he's not done at Marvel. So I'm really curious what else he's going to do.
Well, I think he has a run of, is it called the Vault of the Spider-Verse or something? Like, it's a 4-issue.
Is he doing that?
I believe he is. And then he has, what else is he doing there? The Asgardians book, of course. Yeah.
Is he doing any of those Marvel Zombies or Marvel whatever?
Marvel Zombies is from the guy who you guys reviewed last week, Ice Cream Man.
Oh, Prince?
The dude, what's his name?
Is it Prince? Is that his last name? I forgot his name.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't remember.
I forget either. But he's the one that's writing Marvel Zombies.
Oh, and he's doing like a crossover like Vampirella and somebody. I just seen like a couple of days ago.
Elvira?
No, it's, I forgot.
Red Sonja? Those are all like characters on Dynamite.
I can't think of the other character, but it's like two characters. Like he's going to bite, I think, write the Vampirella, and then there's an author that they like share the book together.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, the man works hard. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's always writing books. Yeah, check out Cullen Bunn. I mean, even some of the books we're a little tough on Cold Spots, it's still a really good book. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's our spotlight for this week. So let's throw it out there to our open forum, our kind of round table, and our Fred Reads Comics section, where Fred's going to tell us all the awesome books he discovered this week. And we'll talk about some other books that made some noise, because there was one big one that made a lot of noise.
This week I read 24 books, but I don't think I'm going to read all 24 books.
All right. Give us the highlights.
Okay, the ones that I really enjoyed. Yeah. Okay, the first one, because Andrew and I both get our books from DCBS, so some of them I have to wait on. And one book that I really enjoyed was the final book of the Jeff Lemire run of Hit Girl, number 8. That one was really good. I enjoyed that a lot. It's fun. It's a lot of cussing, but it's fun. And a lot of violence. Return of Wolverine, number 1, I caught up on too. That book was great. It was a good time. I'm not too sold on his suit yet, but I enjoyed it. It's good to see him back because, X-Men. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into this one. Heroes in Crisis, number 1. Mm-hmm. Probably the best book I read all week, hands down. I like the shock value. I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this, but I enjoy them killing off some characters. It's about time. I really enjoy that.
Well, whatever, Dido.
My favorite character growing up is Superman. So, Superman died and it was hard on me.
Yeah.
Some of these characters have died multiple times. You got to get used to it by now. Come on now.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about theories with that book?
Ooh. Yeah, I guess we could. I mean, if you haven't read the book, you might not want to hear some of this because our theories on who might be the killer and that type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that might be fun. What do you think, Chris?
I don't have any theories, but I know you guys keep up with the DC books for a while, and there's been kind of hints leading up to this event that, talking about Sanctuary and who knows about it and stuff like that. So I think you guys would know more about that than me. I went into Heroes in Crisis just kind of as a singular book, not knowing anything that predates.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm all for it. I'm here to hear some theories if you want to.
Well, I don't know if you know what happened. I didn't even know till this week because I was behind also what happened on the last panel or second to last panel of the Batman issue. And since King's also writing that kind of we think is going to have a huge impact on it. A sniper took a shot and it hit Nightwing right in the head. Yeah. So Nightwing is hit with a bullet in the head and it ended. So there's a lot of theories that Nightwing is going to be suffering from some issues and maybe he is in Sanctuary.
Right. And I think he definitely is a suspect, but I think I have a stronger suspect.
Go ahead. Hit it.
My suspect is due to the Flash War and everything, Wally trying to find his kids and things like that and the things he went through. Wally, nobody kills a Flash. We all know that because he can change the timeline and everything. I'm thinking Wally, murder, suicide.
Wow. Mm.
He did it. My guess. I mean,
when you told me that, I took part of it and believed it. I could see Wally having done it and Arsenal having taken Wally out with his last breath kind of thing. That's why they're both together.
Yeah. You guys are going to make me cry.
Yeah, I think
that's damn sad.
And well, even if it does turn out to be Nightwing, that's what I was telling a friend through DMs because she was asking me about it. I go, man, if you're a fan of the Titans, this is going to be a rough run because they are messing with Wally. They're messing with Arsenal, Roy. They're messing with Dick Grayson.
Booster
Gold. Yeah, you know. Yeah. We're going to see Tim, that second generation. He was on that cover. Kyle Rayner was on that cover. These are a lot of that second generation players that a certain group of people grew up with, you know, to a lot of people. Wally West and Kyle Rayner are Green Lantern and Flash. That was their Flash. I'm older. My Flash was Barry and Hal, and then later Stewart. But I didn't grow up with a Kyle Rayner like a lot of people did. So it's, yeah.
This is just I feel like the the place where Marvel fanboys are right now and DC fanboys are right now is just two totally different spaces. Cause like right now Marvel is having their Infinity Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like it's some cool stuff. Like the characters are fusing with each other. You're getting like Ghost Rider mixed with Black Panther combined and like Captain America mixed with like Doctor Strange. You're getting all these cool fusions and just a bunch of fun stuff. It's a great book. And then you go to DC and everyone's favorite character's dying. And
you know, it's weird, isn't it? It feels like it flipped because if you would have talked to me a year ago at this time, you know, we were coming off Secret Empire and everybody was down on Marvel and how could you do this to Cap and Natasha was killed. And, you know, it seemed like Miles was going through his because, you know, the Vision that he was going to be the one that killed Cap. He was a mess. Just all that stuff. They were in that place and DC was all Rebirth and happy. And yay. And it's like they said, okay, switch. It's like and they both switched, you know. I don't know. Maybe they can't both give us happy at the same time. Maybe there's some kind of unwritten rule that the two, you know, editor in chiefs call each other. Okay, it's switch time. It's your turn to be dark.
I'm fine. I'm fine with, you know, realistic, more grounded stories as long as they're being told, you know, for a reason that it's not just sad for sadness sake, you know, or just dark for darkness sake. I really feel like there's something to be told here. There's a story to be told here. I respect, I'm not the biggest Tom King fan. I didn't keep up, with this Batman run at all. However, as you guys know, I'm a big Mr. Miracle fan and I'm also really liking this just based off of, you know, Tom King's willingness to talk about mental health and his stories, which I find to be, very refreshing. Even though this is dark, I feel like there's going to be some sort of hope coming out of this.
Yeah.
You know, this was definitely to see like Superman just kind of come down and you just see him kind of solemn, you know, just, he's just like Flash confirmed and he's just like saying all the people who's dead, you know, and just you see him there and, there were some powerful moments, you know, with the Trinity there, just kind of taking in what happened. You know, they're just looking like, is this really happening? You know, we're the three most powerful people on this planet. And like, we let this happen.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on? You know, it was an amazing book, man. We could have an episode just about that book.
Yeah.
But like, that was a good one.
Fred?
Yeah, it was a good book. I don't want to take up the whole show and talk about this whole book, but. Yeah, it's definitely, I'm interested. There's a lot of deaths, but even in Mr. Miracle, there's a lot of deaths. So King kills. People know that. You should know that already.
killed Orion. He killed Grandma Goodness. He kills. This is something King does. If you read his Vision, you know, both the son and the wife are killed in that book. What's his name? Richter. It's Richter, right? Doesn't come fare too well off of that either. The runaway kid. So it's something he does and I trust him. My only last thing I would say about it is trust the process, people. It's one book.
Yeah. Right? And I personally don't think this is permanent. I don't think there's no way this is permanent.
No.
There's no way. It's I personally don't think so. I don't think they're gonna leave these characters dead. Wally just came back. You know, it's not gonna happen. I think. Nah, I'll leave that for another time.
But, right. There's cool. Plenty of time changing characters in this book, so you know.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
I also read Lost City Explorers 4.
We didn't talk about that.
That one was.
How was that?
It was good. The girl, what was the main? I can't think of the main character's name, but she gets to Lost City. She finds it.
Oh, nice!
And then the payoff in this. So, I mean, there's a lot of things in this book. There's a lot. She progresses. Let me tell you that, and I don't want to spoil it because I know Andrew probably hasn't read it yet. No, so, yeah, there's some movement in this book. Teen Titans 22 was really good too. I enjoyed that one. It was nice to see Red Hood in there working with Damian.
Yeah, that was a surprise. That was a good book for me. Kind of had lost interest on Teen Titans. I felt it was, I didn't understand what they were doing with Damian. And to find out that he's actually working with Jason, I would have never in a million years thought those two had been working together the way they fight with each other.
Right.
And the fact that Damian has gone over to that screw my dad attitude for doing it this way. Yeah. With, that's going to lead to some shit when Papa finds out.
I've caught up on issue 3 and 4 of Edge of Spider-Geddon. Man, I really like this this arc, like all the new characters that they introduce and different Spider-Mens. It's been a fun book. Justice League Dark number 3. This book, like each issue has been great. And that's coming from a guy that doesn't like magic and liking a magic book. So it's been super well done. I read Harbinger Wars 2 Aftermath.
I haven't read it yet.
I liked it.
Does it feel like its own thing? That's what I was worried, because it's like an afterword of the event. It's like a little tag on for the event.
Yeah, it kind of progresses, and I think that it's trying to build up a Livewire.
To prep for her own book, which is coming out in December.
I think that's the reason behind this book, actually, to build her up, because they show her with Ninjak and, you know, the other characters.
Gotcha.
I think those are pretty much like the ones I really. Iron Hammer. I'm not getting into the all amalgam characters. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I keep reading them because I'm trying to, you know, I get everything with the Infinity Wars, and these are just happen to be the tie-ins. I like it. It's interesting. And one last one I did catch up on with Mr. and Mrs. X number 3. And, you know, of course I'm reading that because it's Kelly Thompson. So I'm enjoying that story arc too.
Good stuff. Chris, what have you been reading this week? Probably a lot of
X-Men. So listeners in the show know I'm always reading some Marvel. But outside of Heroes in Crisis, I'm thoroughly refreshed by that story. And I even asked my co-host who, you know, love DC for some suggestions so that I could kind of start reading more DC. I actually haven't read a lot of X-Men. I did caught up on my X-Men Blue. I believe the last issue that came out is the last issue that's going to have them as a team. So now we're just going to see them in Extermination, and then I believe that's it. So X-Men Blue is done. So I caught up on that. I've been reading, you know, on your recommendation, Andrew, the Charles
I believe it's Soul.
Yeah, Daredevil. I picked up a trade with Kingpin as like mayor. It's kind of crazy. I think it's the latest trade to come out. I've also been reading the Spider-Geddon stuff, which is, like Chris said, has been really good. Spider-Geddon Zero, which is kind of prequel to Spider-Geddon, which is coming out soon, and it features the Spider-Man from the video game, which was a lot better than I thought, because you can really tell that the person who wrote it played the video game and beat it. Just as far as like certain things in the plot. And that I thought was really interesting because I thought, okay, they're probably going to have him in this, but it's not going to, you know, tie into the video game too much, but it really did. And, he's kind of teaming up with, Superior Spider-Man, which was really fun. And, you know, for those who played the video game, you kind of know that was interesting because, you know, the role Dr. Octopus plays in that universe and stuff. So that was a really fun book that I didn't expect to be that good, but it was. Of course, catching up on some X-Men, catching up. I'm also reading some kind of Silver Age Captain America that I've never gotten into before. Which is kind of cool, from like the 70s. I don't know. It's some weird stories in there, like Captain America fighting like biker gangs and stuff like that, which is kind of cool. Nice. Yeah, you know, I'm always just catching up on older stuff, just racking up my lives. But that's mostly what I've been reading.
Very cool. Yeah, my reading, I am so behind. I've just been so busy. But I did try to read some DC books. I read the Wonder Woman book. I enjoyed it. Orlando's run has been a lot of fun. Nice. I think he did a good job of making me like Wonder Woman again, because I'd been off that book for a long time. So that was a lot of fun. Let's see. I read Harley's book was actually pretty good. It was a lot of fun. It was very like Deadpool-y this time. Like, she ruined the continuity of the DC universe because the villain wrote a comic book that was different or something like that. And she owned the comic. It was really goofy and crazy and did some really crazy Harley things. And I enjoyed it. I just felt it was really entertaining. I like Harley. Started the Aquaman. It was the last one of the Suicide Squad Aquaman combo. Again, Harley was the star of that. In other words, that book was kind of blah. I don't know. Aquaman needs to do something fast. I know they're changing creative teams and it's time, because I think even I, who have been a loyal Aquaman reader, I finally hit my limit on this. They need to come up with something new. Yeah. And that's kind of it. I haven't read a lot else. I've got all those books you guys are talking about, and I need to get off my ass and read them. I need to read Wolverine. I need to read Extermination. Yes. I have the Spider-Geddons. I have, you know, all these books that are excellent.
Wolverine is up there, in my opinion, with Heroes in Crisis right now. It's actually Charles Soule as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And damn, that was a good book. That was like, you know how much, everyone knows how much I love Laura in X-23, but this really made me realize like why Logan had to come back. Like, it's just, he has something that no other hero has in any universe. You know, he's Logan. So you really get that. And that's a great book too. So you should definitely read that, Andrew, when you get the chance. Put that on the top.
Put it on the top. Put it back on. Excellent. Fred, any other ones to add?
I mean, I can read them off if you want.
No, I mean, just if you don't have a big one.
I mean, I kind of liked X-Men Gold 36. I think that was the last issue too, but
yeah,
like Chris said, X-Men Blues actually has been better than X-Men Gold.
What I think hurt Blue? The stupid Secret Empire hurt Blue.
Yep.
It threw it off. They were doing really something, and then it got all wacky and.
Listen. Go ahead, Fred.
No, I was just gonna say like that. At least the last 10 issues of Blue have been excellent. Like they
agreed.
It's picked up, and Magneto. You know, it started to look like Magneto was the Cullen Bunn Magneto to me.
Yeah, like I totally agree with that, Andrew. Because they, when it first started, it was kind of like this fun kind of like. It was almost like it felt like a Teen Titans or like a, you know, they were like these young heroes trying to find their way. It was like a Champions, but a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And, Jean was leading it and they were really onto something and they were fighting these really fun enemies. And then I remember like out of nowhere, it was just like a Secret War time. I'm like, wait, what the hell? Like, why are they captured by Emma Frost? What's going on? and I like skip that and then come back, and then they had a crossover with X-Men Gold where they did the Mojo Verse.
Yeah.
Then they broke off, and then they had another arc of like going through time, which was kind of like
Venom. Then isn't that when they
that was before Venom? That was right before Venom, where they were like going through time, and that's when you started getting the sense of they were gonna get sent back to their own world. Then it was the Venom stuff, which I personally kind of liked. I don't know if I'm alone in that sentiment, but I liked the Venom stuff. And then they did, what was after? Then they started doing the last 10 issues that Fred is talking about, where like Magneto, they're missing in space because of the Venom stuff, and Magneto has to put together a new team. And damn, that team was good and led by Polaris. I love a Polaris-led X-Men. I hope X-Men team. And I hope that that continues, because Polaris is one of my favorite, you know, X-Men characters. Yeah, I can go on about that all day.
Very cool. So, all right. Unless we want to toss out a certain trailer, I mean, I think that's it for the books. Do you guys want to have a comment on Dark Phoenix? Did everyone see it?
Yeah, I personally liked it. I think that there were stakes, you know. I felt like the last Phoenix movie, it was low stakes, man. Like, yeah, you know, this is someone who can devour sun stars and planets and stuff. And I love to see them in space. I love to see that, like, it seemed like the X-Men is actually there to kind of help her not become Dark Phoenix, you know, like. I didn't like how, like, in X-Men 3, like, Scott died right in the beginning. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Scott plays a big role with Dark Phoenix and Jean Grey, and that didn't make sense. So I feel like they're fixing everything that was wrong with that movie, and it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I would echo everything that, you know, Chris said, but I only have one issue with the trailer. It was the issue with Storm with an umbrella in the rain.
there's probably a gag with that. That's so it. I'll give it a pass till we see the whole thing. No, but I mean, yeah. But yeah, I'm not as high.
She could have just made it stop raining, right?
Yeah. Exactly. I'm
Is that what the argument was?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not a fan of Foxman as much as you guys are. I just, they've never quite hit for me. They've never felt like my X-Men that I wanted from the X-Men. At least they put them in some yellow and blue type uniforms this time instead of the black leather. I would have liked, you know, the way Apocalypse ended, the way they were dressed. The individual, I think it's time for those movies to allow the X-Men to be individual uniforms. I think that's what I miss at this point. Instead of the, like, I want Rogue in the green. You know, I want Nightcrawler in the blue and the red. I want, you know, that personality that they are instead of the generic.
We'll get it in the MCU for sure.
Yeah, well, you're probably right, though. Probably give
the
us
MCU
that.
Is about the only cinematic universe that could pull off something so damn colorful.
Yeah.
Deadpool, I agree with you.
Deadpool. You got to give Deadpool credit. I mean, it does go for the color. It's not scared, you know, to make it colorful.
Those kind of reminded me of, like, the Grant Morrison, like, uniforms.
Yeah.
The big X in the middle. Right?
I think you're right.
Yeah. And he was inspired by the movies. I found that out. He was inspired by the first two X movies, because that came out. His run started after X-Men 2.
Oh, wow.
And he wanted to have kind of like a uniformed X-Men, everyone wearing the same thing. So he kind of came up with that idea based on that. I like the Foxman because, like, you know, outside the cartoon, you know, when the first X-Men movie came out, what, 2000?
Yeah.
2001. I was barely old enough to read comics, so it was like, that was kind of my, like, introduction outside of, like, the animated series of X-Men. So I always thought it was kind of cool. But I totally get why, you know, fans are passionate and kind of want, you know, things to be like the comics. But at the end of the day, I do think that people, not like you, but I'm just saying in general, should like try to understand that these are just adaptations, you know. If you want the comic, you can just read the comic.
Amen.
You know, like, I feel like some people out there just, they take it too far with this. Like, if you want the comic, it's not like the comic. If you want the comic, pick up the comic, read the comic book.
Exactly. It's I completely agree with that. That's not my, where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that. Like, you're like, I get what you mean, but some people just like are all over the place with that, and I don't know.
I'm scared to even bring it up because it could get ugly. Okay, but that's the whole Black Canary bullshit, because she's a not a blonde, blue eyed actress. You know what? Just read the comic if it bothers you that much. Watch Arrow. Watch, you know, there's so many. I mean, this, if it really bugs you that freaking much. You know, this is, like you said, it's an adaptation. They're going to make one, maybe two movies. Knowing DC, they'll screw it up and only make one because it'll do bad, because they'll do something dumb like they always do. I mean, it's not the end of the world. They're going to make other versions of it later. That's all it is a version. It's like the people complained about Jared Leto. Look it, we already have a new Joker. Now you can call that crying you did for what purpose?
People forget about the word adaptation. It's someone's interpretation of the source material. Yeah. Doesn't mean it has to be one-to-one. It doesn't mean it has to be every little thing that happened in the comic has to happen in the movie. I get it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I could go off, so I'm just going to zip it. Fred?
I have nothing.
Yeah, you're smart, man, because like I have a lot, and I'm just telling myself, just don't. Just let's go. Let's go.
I'm saving my aggression for hockey tomorrow.
There you go. All right. Well, that's it for today. We'll go ahead and wrap this show up with our goodbyes. Thanks again for listening to us. My name's Andrew. I go by the Twitter handle Real Comics, RealComics. You can find our show, Street Level Floppies, at Street LVL Floppy. No S. Ran out of characters. And where can they find you, Fred?
You can find me at Comic Spread on Twitter. Sorry, I was just thinking of something else.
You can find me on Twitter at panels underscore hoodies. Definitely hit me up. Let us know. Hit us up on the Street Level Floppies Twitter and let us know what you think of my writing, my first writing thing on the What if you bought the book. Tell me if you enjoyed learning about Jubilee and Rogue's backstory. We'd all be interested in hearing.
Hell yeah. Leave a question. Maybe we'll have a little question. We'll ask him questions and stuff. And so yeah, definitely get involved. Once again, you can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, directly from Libsyn. Anywhere. Subscribe, comment, give us a like. It all helps. If you subscribe, you'll know when it comes out. And you won't miss another one. Anything else to add, Fred?
Nope.
Take us out.
Let me see if I got this memorized. Just like the streets we call our home, show some love for the creator owns. We out.